Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Burden of Power by Michael Anderle, narrated by Emily Beresford. Chapter 1. Monsted Kultgrube, Stoholm, Denmark, Wednesday morning, mid-July. Flor Vries, PhD, did not spend 9 years grinding her way through every sub-school and supplemental program of Cambridge University's Department of Archaeology to land a low-paying job as an adjunct professor teaching a bunch of younger students how to compete with her for the sorts of exciting jobs that drove them into the field in the first place. 4 months ago, she'd been staring down the barrel of that fate. In this modern age of microchips and quantum computing, techno-thrillers and cult-like futurism, Fleur had fallen out of the academic pipeline in time to see the last pools of scholarly interest in the past drying up. They had evaporated beneath the heat of jet engines and an ever-warming planet. Back in the 60s, you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting some university endowment willing to fund your proposed expedition into Bolivia to search for Mayan ruins. These days, you were lucky if the same university that sucked out a decade of your prime years was willing to offer you a lecturer position to supplement the income you made from bagging groceries. So, when the handsome lug of a man named Samuel Goodwin had walked out of the crowd and offered Fleur a job at the Villon Institute, she opted to ignore persistent and growing rumors about the institute's unethical excavation practices and leaped into Sam's big, beefy arms. Metaphorically. And gods, it felt good. It looked good. It smelled good. The cathedrals of limestone caves lacing the ground beneath Stoholm formed a peaceful, silent world, so close and yet so alien to the residents of the cities and towns above. Fleur had visited Monsted Kultgrube with her uncle as a child. They'd followed a doddering old tour guide through the most accessible sectors of the cave system turned defunct lime mine, where permanent electrical wiring illuminated the pale sandy walls and still blue pools of the underground lakes. She had always wondered what lay beyond the safety of those overhead lights, past the barricades meant to keep lost children and reckless teens from getting swallowed up by the dark and silent earth. Now she knew. Fleur wiped a bead of sweat from her brow, drank a long swig from her canteen, and lifted her phone to her lips once more.
The mobile nature of the keystones and the uniform dimensions of their sockets makes it obvious that the creators intended for the stones to be rearranged, she told the voice recorder app.
She rested her wrist on her knee and leaned forward, scowling at the statue in front of her. Her team had discovered it in one of the lowest bowels of the cave system, on a small island at the center of a shallow underground lake.
It was a 10-foot-tall depiction of a woman standing upright, holding aloft a war axe in one hand and touching the head of the wire-haired wild pig standing at her side like a loyal dog. All carved from limestone, of course. As pristine and smooth as if it had been shaped from the stone only yesterday, and by the hand of a master.
Fleur had quickly gotten over her shock at finding a Viking shrine to Freya, isolated down here in the caverns. Common understanding was that these caves had been largely untouched by humans until early Christians began mining them for limestone to build their cathedrals sometime in the 14th century. When Sam Goodwin had told Fleur where Villon was sending her and what she was supposed to find there, she had taken the whole magical Viking artifacts shtick with a grain of salt. Villon was paying, and she got to go to interesting places. So, if her employers wanted to believe in Hui, who was she to argue? Now, though, looking at this impossible statue and the low altar slung at its feet, Fleur was happy enough to swallow that salt and ask for more. A quick inspection told her the shrine was not some elaborate prank or hoax. The Freya statue was cut from a single piece of limestone, and it was larger than any of the entrances to the cavern. Fleur imagined some ancient master craftsman, touched by madness and devotion, isolating himself in this cavern with a year's supply of dried meat and oil and kindling for fire. Chiseling Freya, her pig, and her altar out of the rock one day at a time. Obsessing over every feather in the goddess's cloak, every hair on the pig's wiry head, every empty socket in the altar's surface. Fleur shook her head, warding off the distracting lines of thought.
She resumed recording her notes. There are 9 empty sockets in the altar's surface, arranged in a 3x3 grid. So far, we've found 7 corresponding tablets scattered around the chamber. They're each about the size of a postcard, maybe an inch thick. I've got my team dredging through the lake to find any more. Luckily, the water is pretty clear and shallow. She hesitated, letting her gaze roam across the broad expanse of the cavern, which was about half the size of an American football field, and maybe 15 feet high at its highest point. Normally, one expected silence this far into the bowels of the earth. But today, it was filled with a steady, echoing, sloshing noise. Sometime in the last few hundred years, an underground river had broken into the chamber and flooded it with about 3 feet of cold, sweet-smelling water. Floor had her team of excavators trudging a grid pattern through the shallows in rubber waders, searching for the 2 missing tablets. Nearby, Mr. Kelwig, the operations overseer for this dig, stood scratching his head as he puzzled at the key tablets Floor had left sitting on the altar. Floor continued into the mic.
Unluckily, several of the tablets had apparently been submerged in the water for quite some time. Every one of them shows some degree of erosion, but 2 are particularly bad.
Here she winced, preparing to do something uncomfortable and admit her ignorance.
I can't confidently identify the markings on the tablets. The ones that aren't completely worn away have a linear similarity to Nordic runes. The 2 languages share several common symbols, but not enough for me to make any kind of sensible translation. I'm not aware of any similar written language in the historical record. We might be looking at a newly discovered language, a sister cognate to Runic.
That would have been a huge discovery if true, and one that would make Floor's career. If she could convince Villon to let her publish. Her non-disclosure contract with her employer was pretty strict. Villon liked to keep a proprietary hold over everything discovered within its dig sites. When you made the bulk of your profits selling artifacts to museums and collectors with varying degrees of academic integrity, anything your employers dug up was basically a trade secret. Floor sighed and dropped her phone into the waterproof pocket of her ugly green waders, then zipped it shut. Her thoughts were running in 12 different directions at once. She wasn't in the right frame of mind for taking notes. She pushed to her feet and stepped off her rock, wading across 10 feet of ankle-high water to the center island.
"Any insight?" she asked Mr. Kelwig.
The older German man shook his head. He had arranged the tablets into 7 of the 9 sockets, and now chewed his lip as he studied them.
"I suppose we are expected to put the correct tablet into each slot."
He spoke Danish perfectly, without any noticeable accent.
"It would be easier if we knew what the tablets said."
Floor smiled wryly as a thought occurred to her. A year ago, she would have dismissed the idea of mechanically elaborate puzzle traps hiding treasure as some silver screen conceit. Now that she stood before one, she might as well take it at face value.
"Not necessarily," she told the site manager. "There are only 9 variables to the puzzle. That means..."
She did some quick mental math.
"Only about 350,000 potential combinations."
Kelwig laughed.
"Oh, I see. You take your notes, go back to the archives, and try to decipher the language. Meanwhile, me and the boys sit down here for the next year, trying every single combination one at a time."
"Whoever built this place was a master engineer."
Floor eyed the altar.
"But I highly doubt they built a lockout protocol into their puzzle. If Villon is so convinced there's some kind of hidden magic, the cost of maintaining a team trying to brute force its way past this should mean little to them."
Kelwig tipped back his miner's hat, scratching his hairline.
"Ah, you might be right. But let us hope it doesn't come to that. The thought of staying down here for even a month rearranging blocks in a grid leaves me tempted to stick dynamite in the thing and hope for the best."
"At this stage in the discovery process, Mr. Kelwig, there are no bad ideas."
Floor and the site manager turned to see a new group of 6 men entering the cavern through the largest side tunnel. 4 of them had donned rubber waders and sloshed through water ranging from ankle to waist deep. They had rifles slung over their shoulders. Between them, they towed a bright orange inflatable raft containing Samuel Goodwin and another armed man. Floor's team of excavators shuffled out of the newcomer's path, keeping their heads down as they combed the cavern floor for any loose debris or rubble that might be one of the two lost tablets.
Mr. Goodwin!
Kelwig swiped off his hat and held out a hand as Sam's raft reached the center island, and the big man stepped onto dry land. Kelwig's English was as crisp as his Danish.
I didn't know you were coming down here.
He eyed the group of armed men nervously.
Is there a, problem? No, no,
Sam assured him as he tucked a heavy-duty tablet and clipboard beneath his arm and shook Kelwig's hand.
My boys here are a precautionary measure. Some of our other dig sites have had problems with local looters, and we didn't want to leave your folks here without backup in case they had the same problem.
Kelwig squinted up at the ceiling, doubtless considering the mile of unlit, unmarked tunnel a potential looter would have to traverse to get here. And that was assuming they even found out about this dig.
I suppose, he conceded dubiously, this crew isn't trained to deal with violence and theft. That is true.
Sam nodded.
Exactly. Don't you worry. This group will stay out of your way. They're only here to take over if anything goes wrong. But that's just one reason I stopped by. Some of our people at headquarters had a breakthrough, and I figured it might help you crack this puzzle wide open.
He turned a glittery-eyed grin on Fleur. She folded her arms, telling herself she would not be distracted by the man's adorable little spectacles. From the corner of her eye, Fleur saw one of the diggers wading toward the island, carrying something obscured in his big rubber gloves. She held up a finger, holding him off.
There is such a thing as a bad idea, she told Sam.
Despite her years at Cambridge, her English was not as perfect as Kelwig's.
I can think of many reasons why solving this puzzle with explosives might be one of them.
Oh, sure, Sam chuckled. The dynamite option is on the table, but only as a last resort.
He offered his tablet to her. It was larger than a standard tablet computer and wrapped in a heavy-duty steel case that looked engineered to protect it from everything from water damage to fire to, well, explosives.
This isn't the first time our people have encountered this particular runic sublanguage.
He indicated the 7 tablets arranged on the altar.
They've put together a key that might help you decipher it.
Fleur took the computer, trying to hide her disappointment. She couldn't take credit for this discovery now. She forgot her annoyance quickly as she studied the charts on the screen. She paced the small island, absently nibbling on her thumbnail as she studied, comparing the unidentified symbols to their more common runic counterparts.
Yes, she murmured,
pausing to gesture to a half-faded symbol on one of the tablets.
Yes, if that sequence translates to lady or queen, we might be looking at a hymn. The puzzle builder wants us to prove our devotion by assembling the correct list of the goddess's titles and attributes.
She fell silent again, gears turning in her mind as she compared the key to the other unknown symbols on the tablets. Kelwig turned to Sam.
This might be very helpful, yes.
The old German sounded apologetic.
But I very much doubt we would be able to complete the puzzle with 2 pieces still missing. There may be... Mr. Kelwig!
Finally growing impatient, the excavator standing in the shallows of the island lifted his voice. All eyes except Fleur's turned on him. He gulped, paling beneath the gaze of all those armed men. He mumbled in Danish, waddling forward to offer out his findings.
I found them in a crevasse at the west end of the lake. I'm afraid they won't do you much good.
Sam plucked up the man's discoveries, not bothering to put on gloves first, as was standard procedure in a dig. He hefted 1 stone tablet in each palm and turned to compare them to the other stones spread across the altar sockets.
They look about right to me.
Frowning, he turned them over.
Blank, though.
Kelwig snapped gloves over his hands and gingerly turned over the fresh finds.
Erosion,
he remarked, disappointed.
See how much more worn these are than the others?
Sam didn't seem bothered.
We have equipment for that kind of thing. If worse comes to worse, we can take them up top and pop them in a light scanner.
That may not be necessary.
Fleur set the tablet down and snapped her fingers toward a boulder that made up one of the 6 dry islands in this underground pond.
Someone fetch the chalk and paper in my bag. We'll try taking a rubbing first. See if that gets us where we need to go.
The man who found the 2 tablets ducked his head and waited off to do as he was told, as Kelwig and Sam leaned over Fleur's shoulders. She stood before the low altar table, eyes bright as she shuffled the tablets across the sockets.
Some of these symbols come in pairs. Here, this one is war and its partner valor, love and passion, prophecy and insight.
Domains and attributes associated with Freya, Sam agreed, glancing at the magnificent statue over the tops of his spectacles. Even if we have to brute force our way through the puzzle, having those symbols paired up will drastically decrease the number of possible combinations.
Floor smiled as she played with the order of the tablets. It was easy to forget a man like Sam could have brains as well as beauty. The excavator returned with her equipment, and Floor knelt, making sloppy rubbing replicas of the two eroded tablets. When she held the rubbings up to the light, she could make out the faintest of runic inversions on the paper.
Look at this!
Kelwig held up the tablet, enlarging the symbol for Lady and comparing it to the rubbing.
This can't be right. Why would three of the tablets all have the exact same message?
There's plenty of repetition in hymns and prayers, Mr. Kelwig.
Floor pushed the sheets into his arms and rounded on the table. Her fingers trembled as she slotted the tablets into the table.
In Viking tradition, Freya was the goddess of war and valor, the queen of prophecy and insight, the lady of love and passion. All we have to do is figure out which order the puzzle maker intended. There are only so many.
Floor slotted the second of the empty tablets into place. A loud click echoed around the watery cavern, followed immediately by a heavy thud. She gasped, startled out of her concentration, as something banged against the toe of her waders.
Bingo!
Sam whooped and ducked, scooping up a box that had dropped from a secret compartment on the underside of the altar. Floor winced, biting back the urge to scold her employer for grabbing the goods barehanded.
Look at that beauty!
Sam set the box on the altar for them to appreciate. It was about as long as Fleur's forearm, from her elbow to the tips of her fingers, wide as her splayed hand, and perhaps 3 inches deep. The material appeared to be some form of silver. It was miraculously untarnished for something that must have been left unattended for over 500 years. By the glow of the portable lamps lighting the cavern, Fleur could have sworn the metal shimmered and sparkled in its own right, glistening with some inner fire. Deeply etched symbols, similar to the ones on the tablets, covered the box. Floor would have grabbed the computer and started the translation if she weren't so enchanted by the play of light and shadow across the pristine metal. Sam's thick fingers moved reverently over the grooves and edges and stopped along the side.
Here's the opening, he breathed.
He gripped the box in both hands and pried, trying to lift the tightly fitted lid. Without thinking, Floor grabbed the base. The metal felt warm and tingly, even through her gloves, as if it were electrified. She held it steady as Sam pulled. Her heart thudded in her ears. Some little part of her, the good schoolgirl, the teacher's pet, wailed at such rough treatment of something so old and pretty. But that little voice drowned quickly in a sea of impatience and greed. A look of intense concentration, of focus, almost like lust, had come over Sam's face. And Floor felt it too. The box. She needed to know what was in the box right now. Veins popped in Sam's neck as he gripped the box and pulled. The tips of his fingers went white, pressing into the metal.
Damn it!
He snarled.
Damn it! Damn it! Come on! Ugh!
He stepped back, shaking the tension from his shoulders, and looked around at the gear scattered around this central island. He snatched a pry bar out from Kelwig's pack. On seeing what Sam intended to do, Kelwig released a cry of alarm.
Mr. Goodwin!
Help us or get out of the way!
Floor growled. The box was heavier than it looked. Either it was gold, or it contained something quite dense. She lifted it and wedged it into a gap in the stones at the base of the altar. Kelwig gave her a hopeless, befuddled look. Floor couldn't blame him. This wasn't like her. This wasn't how Dr. Vries, always so careful and thorough and thoughtful, conducted herself. Manhandling may have been par for the course for a brute like Goodwin, but this wasn't her. Except right now it was. Something had come over Floor. She was a wolf chasing prey, and the moon was full. Kelwig scrambled out of the way as Sam came forward with the pry bar. Moving in unspoken coordination, Sam and Floor stuck the box fast and slid a stone beneath the pry bar to act as a lever. In the back of her mind, Floor thought she heard drums. War drums. This was a battle somehow, and her blood was up. She could smell iron in the air. Blood and sweat. Sam's sweat. She would have to get his number after this. More than his number. She was going to need it. Muscles rippled in the big man's shoulders as he pushed his whole weight onto the end of the pry bar. The gap between the box's lid and base grew no wider.
Come on!
Sweat dripped down the end of his nose as he gritted his teeth.
You son of a bitch! Come on!
Floor scrambled up and leaned over Sam's back, hooking her arms around his thick neck and adding her weight to the balance at the end of the lever. She cursed in Danish and felt Sam's muscles twitch in surprise at her presence.
Foolish girl!
A voice whispered into the space between Floor's ears. It was not her voice, not her ego or superego or id or any other voice she'd known throughout her life. It was a woman's voice, sweet and light and almost girlish. A voice rife with layers of amusement, sadness, and warning.
Do not waste your time with this silly thing. There's nothing good in it for you. Why fight for some cold piece of stone when you have a better treasure right beneath you? Leave these arcane things where they lie. Go home, flower of youth. Take the man beside you and go home, for there is no treasure, no magic in the world that will warm your bed on a lonely winter night.
Floor's head spun with the scent of Sam's sweat. The silent voice was enchanting, bewitching, enthralling, and absolutely correct. Screw the dig, screw the job, screw the career. In that moment, Floor would much rather screw the boss. She was about to wrap herself around Sam's straining torso, run her fingers through his hair, and put her mouth on his neck, when the man released a wordless cry of rage and defeat. He straightened suddenly, knocking Floor back onto her feet. She stumbled before catching herself. Her head spun. The spell shattered. Her cheeks burned as passion took a back seat to embarrassment. Some of Goodwin's armed men, who stood by impassively as the boss worked, were staring at her. In Floor's head, that strange, unfamiliar voice gave a sigh of disappointment and was no more.
Kelwick!
Sam rounded on the site manager. His eyes had gone big and bloodshot. His nostrils flared and squeezed as he sucked at the air.
Do you have a hydraulic press up at base camp?
Kelwick rolled his miner's helmet nervously around in his fingers.
A hydraulic press? Or a jackhammer? A lifting jack? Hell, I'd make do with a stick of dynamite.
Kelwig's shoulders slumped in relief. He nodded frantically.
Yes, yes, a jackhammer and explosives. But they're all up at base camp on the surface. We didn't want to bring anything down that could destabilize the...
Sam didn't need to hear anything else. He kicked the useless pry bar aside and picked up the box, tucking it beneath his arm. He had climbed back into his inflatable raft and snatched up the paddle before Floor returned fully to her senses. She scrambled after the raft as Sam dipped the paddle into the water and pushed himself along the bottom of the shallow lake. The sound of splashing water filled the cavern. Maybe that was why nobody noticed the deep, rumbling sound bubbling up from the ground.
Hang on!
Floor chased the raft toward the tunnel mouth, fighting her way through water knee-deep, then hip-deep.
Sam, wait! I solved the puzzle! I want to be there when you open the box!
Sam paused in his rowing and glanced over his shoulder at her. At first, she thought he would see reason, paddle to one of the boulders dotting the canyon, and let her climb into the raft. Then she saw his eyes flick upward. She followed his gaze. A dangling shard of calcium carbonate, a stalactite that had been growing there since the dawn of time, broke free from the roof of the cavern and plummeted into the lake 6 inches in front of Floor. She screamed and fell backward. The lip of her waders dipped beneath the surface, and ice-cold water flooded against her skin, weighing her down and pinning her butt to the shallow lake bed. She coughed as the water's surface became a chaotic roil beneath her chin. The air rumbled. Distantly, she heard the excavators and the guards shouting in alarm as more broken stalactites dropped like missiles into the water. Flor fought the added weight of water and mass and rose to her knees, squinting through the spray, to find Sam dipping his paddle into the water once more.
Goodwin!
She choked, reaching out with one grasping hand. Stone, water, and dust filled the air all around her. The lake bed rumbled beneath her feet. The cavern was collapsing.
Help!
For a moment, she felt he might. Through the curtain of chaos, she thought she saw consternation flicker across his broad, handsome face. Yes, he was brash and a bit boorish and reckless, but he wasn't a monster. Then he set the tip of his paddle against the cavern wall and pushed, sending his little raft gliding into the safety of the adjoining tunnel. The last thing Dr. Fleur Vries saw before the earth crushed her in its eternal embrace was Samuel Goodwin waving at her and looking ever so slightly regretful behind the rims of his stupid little glasses. Glad Dalgard Farms, Stolholm, Denmark, Wednesday morning. Mads felt the ground tremble and leaned forward to catch Mrs. Jensen's porcelain songbirds before they could tumble off the porch rail and smash into a million pieces on the concrete below. In his haste to save the old bird's birds, he neglected to rescue his half-empty can of mysterious Turkish energy drink. It tipped off the edge of the table and glug-glugged its lime-green contents into his lap.
Bloody hell!
He set the birds flat on the deck and grabbed the can just in time to salvage the last mouthful of hyper-caffeinated swill as the earth ceased its sudden and highly unusual rumble. Mads sighed, eyeing the puddle of energy drink seeping into the whitewashed planks of the Jensen's little second-floor patio. He wondered if the green food coloring would stain. Hell, he wondered if the high-octane beverage would eat through the flaking paint and strip the wood beneath. Lord knew it had done worse to Mads's insides before he'd developed a tolerance. He glanced around and spotted an old tin watering can sitting in the corner of the patio. By the weight and smell of it, it had been collecting rainwater for the entire month the Jensens had been down on holiday in Greece. He used it to rinse away the spilled beverage, and could do nothing except hope it wouldn't poison the ground beneath the deck and turn it fallow until the end of time. That done, he settled back into his chair, tentatively patting the wet spot over his crotch. He caught the songbirds judging him with their lifeless, beady little eyes.
"Not a word of this to the fam," he told them sternly. "You remember who saved your cheeky little asses from a fatal fall when the big scary earthquake hit?"
With that invocation on his tongue, his underwear soggy, and his pride salvaged solely by the fact that the Jensens were damn well never going to find out an infamous treasure hunter had been using their charming little farm as a safe house, he got to the business of figuring out what was going on. He lifted his binoculars from his backpack and scanned the rolling green hills that surrounded the farmhouse for miles in every direction. Denmark, he had learned over the last month, was practically infamous for its lack of earthquakes. Hadn't had one of the buggers in over a decade. And what, pray tell, were the odds that Old Man Earth would throw one of his rare fits at the moment Mads had stationed himself here to keep an eye on the shady archaeologists and their big yellow diggers camping out at the mouth of the country's largest network of limestone caves? He found the white flapping tents of Villon's base camp through the binoculars and rotated the dial, bringing the distant dig into sharper focus.
"Oh," he muttered. "Would you get a load of this? There's a right cock-up going on down there."
Mads was not above talking to a set of porcelain turtle doves, as long as no one else was around to hear. It had been a lonely, dull couple of days at the farm, and he'd forgotten to download his usual podcasts before going dark. If he didn't hear a human voice, any voice, he was likely to go bonkers. So long as the birds didn't start talking back, he told himself, he was fine. The Villon Institute base camp was tucked behind a low hillock about half a mile off, and from the Jensen's patio, and with the aid of modern technology, Mads had a nice, clear view of the administration tents clustered around the mouth of a mine shaft the Wankers had cut right into the hillside. After their pair of epic Icelandic disasters, it seems Villon had decided to nix the foreplay. No more did they bother faffing around with local digging permits and governmental approval, and silly conventions like using the same bloody tunnel the rest of the world uses to tour Mondstadt Kultgruber. Oh no. Bypassing the standard archaeological regulations was right kind of them. Mads had an inside line into the locations of Villon's current dig sites, and any time his source coughed up a location Mads couldn't cross-verify with the relevant...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?